Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Andrea and Ron DeFeo, Dr. Robert Peskin, and Dr. Raymond Ellis. The Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority, known as Metro, serves the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area with rail transit, buses, and paratransit vehicles. Metro is a leader among U.S. cities in providing accessible transportation for people with disabilities. Here to tell us about Metro's accessibility accomplishments and challenges is David Schoffer, who is Metro's Accessibility Policy Officer. David, I'm very happy to be talking to you this morning.
Well, I'm happy to be here. I'm very excited to tell you some about our accessibility features and how we're the most accessible bus and rail system in the country.
So I'm anxious to hear that, in particular because I'm in and out of Washington a lot. I've got my Metro card in my pocket and I ride the system quite a bit. Could you start out by telling us what the meaning of accessibility is in the public transit business?
Well, to us, it refers to accessibility for people with disabilities, primarily. But what we find is that when you make things accessible for people with disabilities, like making curb cuts on streets for wheelchairs, then it benefits everybody. It's easier for everybody to get on and off the curb. It's easier for people with strollers. So by making our system fully accessible to people with disabilities, we make it even more accessible to everybody else.
Well, that certainly makes sense. You know, one of the things that occurs to me is that when people refer to customers with disabilities, they focus very much on wheelchair-limited individuals. What's the spectrum or spread of disabilities that you're trying to serve?
It's everything from people with mobility disorders, such as people that using wheelchairs, walkers, canes, crutches, the blind, visually impaired, deaf, and hard of hearing, also people with cognitive disabilities. We have to design things so that they're able to better use and understand, for example, our website and directions, and people with epileptic disorders. That's just the main categories, but basically it can refer to people that, you know, have a heart condition, that have had a stroke, that maybe just can't quite make the stairs or need the elevator or need the priority seating. It also refers to seniors, which is also part of our mission.
So as you describe that, does it ever happen at this point in time that somebody brings to you a disability that's maybe new to you, that you hadn't thought about before?
Well, it hasn't happened for a while. I've been doing this disability work for about 30 years, so I think I've seen most of it now. But I am occasionally confronted with things that I've never heard before, like people that can be startled by a train horn and actually have a seizure because of it. That was something recently. So we have to think of all sorts of things, and then people do come up with new ones.
When people talk about Metro as a leader among U.S. cities in accessibility, from your point of view, what does that really mean? What are you doing that others are not doing or where they're lagging behind?
Well, for example, every single one of our stations has elevators. That's not true in any major city, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, Boston, and none of them have a fully accessible rail system. That's even not true in Europe, London, Paris. All of our buses are fully accessible. They all have ramps now. They're all low-floor buses that people can just walk right into. The priority seating is in all locations. Our stations are accessible. Our trains are accessible. So the whole system is fully ADA compliant and has been for some time. We even introduce features that you won't see anywhere else, like along our train platforms, in addition to there being bumpy tiles to warn people that are blind and visually impaired from stepping onto the tracks. There's flashing lights that start when the train's arriving so that people that are deaf who don't hear the train can see the flashing lights. It also helps warn everybody. So it's a safety feature designed for low vision and deaf that now benefits everybody by making the system safer.
Now, your rail system is relatively new and built in the 70s and 80s and even more recently. I presume it was designed to be accessible from the start.
No, it wasn't, actually. Our original system did not have elevators. We had to put them in response to litigation from the Paralyzed Veterans Association. And that was an agreement we made with them. And then we then have made all of our new stations fully accessible. But that's why in the old stations, you'll find the elevators tucked in some weird corner, sometimes really hard to find, half a block away, because we had to retrofit them and put them in odd places.
I understand that, and I've experienced that in a few of the stations. There are federal mandates for providing accessible mobility. Is Metro following those mandates and more, or have you gone beyond what the mandates are?
Absolutely. I mean, that's our minimum threshold. We have our own lighting and sign standards that go beyond the ADA that we ensure that's done in our system and that our contractors follow when they're building things. Any adjacent construction has to conform to our specific guidelines in addition to ADA requirements. So our goal is to try to make the system as accessible as feasible, but at a minimum, you know, fully accessible as required by law. And we're audited regularly by the FTA to determine our compliance.
You've described some of these already, but are there specific accessibility features that I'll experience on Metro that I really won't see anywhere else?
Well, for example, the flashing lights, the elevators. You'll see the lighting in our stations is improving considerably. We're engaged in a huge lighting upgrade throughout the system in the older stations. I mean, you'll see a much easier to maneuver, see, hear system. And then with our new 7,000 series trains, we have automated announcements that help the visually impaired know when to get on and off the train, which solves all of the problems that systems have with people making announcements. And then, you know, on top of it all, we're engaging in some new ventures, which I can describe, to make the system even more accessible.
What are some of those new ventures?
Well, we've installed Bluetooth beacons in our major stations that work with an app that guide the blind and anyone else really how to find a train. It takes them step by step from the entrance of a station down to the platform. If you arrive at a station, you can change trains. And there are audio routes that navigate the station for you. And every feature of the station has a beacon on it that announces when you're near it what you're near. It's made negotiating our system totally revolutionary for the blind and visually impaired. And we're now engaging in a procurement process to do the same for about 2,000 of our bus stops.
That's pretty impressive. So is this actually in place in rail stations?
It is. Our app is getting ready to be launched this fall. Right now, we're still in the beta, but I've tested it all. I'm also visually impaired. So I personally tested the system, and we've tested it with people that are totally blind who have never been in the station before, and they can get from the front entrance to their train without any help at all now.
That's pretty impressive, and it sounds like something that might be helpful to me when I'm changing trains at Metro Center and trying to find the right outbound train.
Exactly, and it's also for tourists and visitors. So it's an additional example of how making something accessible for people with disabilities benefits everybody. When we get the bus stop beacon project launched, everybody will be able to walk up to a bus stop and listen to a beacon on their phone telling them what buses are there, when the next one's arriving, and a link to find how to get to the bus.
I can see that that would be particularly advantageous for the occasional user, the tourist, trying to navigate the system.
Absolutely.
So what are the major challenges that you face in keeping all these features together and functioning?
Money and staff. Our ADA office is small but mighty. There's five of us working on the bus and rail system accessibility, but we all have our own expertise. We have an architect that specializes in accessible design, a compliance officer, we have an engineer, all focused on accessibility features.
One of the things that occurs to me, based on my own experience, is you've got some monstrously long escalators in that system. Is it a special challenge to keep them in service?
Absolutely. And we have a huge elevator escalator repair team. And we've got 91 stations, and I don't even remember how many hundreds of escalators, some of the longest in the Western Hemisphere. But they're always on top of them, and we have a good availability rate, around 95%. And we maintain them pretty well, and we're engaging in the capital improvements to get them even better.
Do you monitor utilization of the accessibility features?
We definitely get reports of problems as far as using them. We don't know when elevators are used or escalators are used by specific people, but we certainly know when they're out. We have remote monitoring that tells us the instant something goes out, goes up on our website. If an elevator is out for a station, a bus bridge is established to get people from one station to the other, and we have a whole system in place to deal with all these kinds of outages.
For some people, riding the mainstream buses just isn't feasible, but you provide a paratransit service as well, is that not so?
Absolutely. We have one of the largest paratransit systems in the country. We're 700 vans, and we carry about 8,000 people a day on paratransit. But paratransit is designed to be our safety net. It's for people that have no other option, that can't use the bus and the train. And the one thing you'll find here, which is also fairly unique, is that we give free transportation for bus and rail for all of our paratransit customers. So we're encouraging people to get on the bus and the train instead of using paratransit to increase their mobility and independence and giving them free transportation.
But if they stay on the paratransit system, is there a fare that they pay?
Yeah, they have to pay a fare on paratransit. So the goal is to help people get more active and independent. We have a travel training team of people that trains people with disabilities on how to use the bus and the train, particularly people with cognitive disabilities. We have 10 travel trainers. We have a travel trainer who's visually impaired, who is an O&M instructor to guide the blind and visually impaired. And we have people specializing in cognitive, the elderly, all sorts of disabilities, to teach them how to use the bus and the train. And then on top of it all, we've developed alternatives to paratransit. We've set up a taxi system in Maryland and D.C. where people with disabilities can ride a taxi for $5 anywhere in the district and anywhere within 9 miles in Maryland. They can call it up hours notice and have instant transportation as an alternative to paratransit too. We're looking to expand that system to our whole metro service area.
Is that contracted out to taxi companies?
Yes.
Do they need to have a specialized vehicle to provide that service?
All the taxi companies are required to have wheelchair-accessible vehicles as well.
And then you compensate them at some rate that's probably higher than the $5?
Yes. The customer pays the first $5 of the fare. We pay the next $15 in Maryland.
Okay.
In D.C., the D.C. government has taken over the program that we established, and they pay the cab driver, I think, $15 or $20 a trip on top of the $5, too.
So D.C. government has really stepped in to pick up that responsibility?
Mm-hmm. Very much so, but funding issues, and we're trying to support them and make their program even stronger to also add additional service for Virginia.
It's a challenge because those services are very costly to provide.
Yeah, paratransit trips cost us over $50 a trip. And by changing, if a person is able to use the cab, then we save $30 a trip on each one. And the customer gets some places more conveniently and quickly.
And if they're able to use the mainline system, they have even more mobility.
Right. And for people with real special needs, they always have the backup of Metro Access. They always have a van show up, get door-to-door service, and take them directly to their destination and escorted to the door again.
The Bluetooth guiding system sounds particularly interesting and cutting edge. Do you see other things coming along in terms of evolution or revolution of technology that will make a real difference in providing accessible mobility in the future?
Oh, absolutely. Right now, one of the many things I'm looking at is the ability to put in the hands of all of our transit police and station managers. Technology will let them do sign language with the deaf, translate into 100 languages, anybody who comes up and asks them questions, and put all this on phones or tablets throughout our system. So those are some of the future things that we're looking at. We're making our website totally accessible, and one of the things that is new and upcoming is translating websites into personal assistants like Alexa or Google Home, where you can simply have their website read through your personal assistant. So the technology that's becoming available to make our services available to people with disabilities is just tremendous. And I go to these international conferences every year on new technology for people with disabilities. And it's really incredible how technology is changing the ability of people with disabilities to be full members of the community.
That's really very encouraging. David, how has your own disability helped you to understand the needs for accessible mobility?
Well, because I live it. I mean, I ride the train every day, I ride the bus, and I feel personally the issues people are having. When the train announcements don't work, I can get off at the wrong stop, too, because I can't read the signs. So it makes me even more motivated to not only help with all the physical aspects of accessibility we have, but the people aspects. Because you can make a system fully accessible, but if you don't involve the people that are using it and working in it, then the accessible system doesn't work. So you have training is key, awareness, sensitivity, and we have to deal with the people side as well as the hard asset side.
Clearly, that's very important, and you've brought us some really useful insights, and I hope people listening can understand that the value of some of the accessibility services you provide go beyond the disabled. Very important for the disabled, but certainly useful and valuable for other people. Just as a closing statement, I want to tell you that I saw something in one of the Chicago newspapers yesterday that said that the goal in Chicago for the transit authority is to have all of the system accessible by 2032. You beat that by a long shot.
Yeah, at least 50 years.
I appreciate your sharing your perspectives with us this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Infrastructure Show. If you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did, please encourage your friends to subscribe to our podcast. The Infrastructure Show is recorded in the Reeves Audio Recording Studios in Evanston, Illinois, under the direction of Jim Reeves, Chief Engineer with a commitment to great sound. Our producer is Marion Sowers, a journalist with a passion for infrastructure. And I am Professor Joseph Schoeffer. Few people are more curious about infrastructure than I am.